Final hour of the Fan Morning Show. JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. Mark Giordano, hero of the people. It's like this formula has become so easy for anybody who wants to be loved in Toronto. Hey, if you're from Toronto and you come to the Leafs and you leave $35 off the table. I mean, Mark Giordano left millions, but if you leave $35 and you go, I just want to be a Leaf, I'll take less. You've made hundreds of millions in your career, tens of millions in your career. You leave some money off the table, people are going to adore you and love it. People love this guy. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. A man who has never left a dollar off the table, Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. Good morning.
Good morning. That sounds accurate.
Correct. So, hey, we've talked about this in the past, buddy, the idea of why don't more guys do this. But honestly, at this point moving forward, it feels like this is really going to be a thing for Toronto. Actually, let me start by asking this. Do you think this is a thing for Toronto moving forward, whether or not they're a contender?
Well, is this like a thing for – is it a Kyle Dubas thing? Like, if he's not here after this year, does it continue to be a thing?
Yes.
I don't – You think it does? Because it wasn't really a thing before, was it?
No, it wasn't. So here's where I'm balancing this, is that one is it kind of was a little bit of a thing in terms of you could get guys that were a little bit more washed up. Like, here's the dirty secret about the Spezza thing. I mentioned this off the top. Spezza came here for the veteran minimum, but he was also at that point a veteran minimum player, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there was a real discussion around him getting benched in that first game with Babcock as, hey, are we really picking the right fights with Babcock here? Should the Leafs be playing guys just to play them in front of their old team, right? Like, he was healthy scratched in that series against the Stars. I think that Spezza and Giordano are doing this because they think that the Leafs can win. So I don't think it's a Dubas thing. I guess it's a Dubas thing if you believe that he is the reason that this team has been set up for success. I would argue that, you know, he wasn't here as the general manager when the three core guys were drafted. Like, he wasn't the main guy. That picking Austin Matthews first overall is not something where you're like, wow, you give this guy a ton of credit for. But I think that this is
kind of the thing. Unknown guy.
But it's like, yeah, if the Leafs are going to be competitive, I think that they should absolutely be in the market for players like this. And I think guys who are looking at this from a I can be home standpoint, but also be loved by the city and remembered and open myself up to like all kinds of other post-career opportunities if I so choose to want them, that, yeah, this is kind of like, this is a big deal. Like, if I'm Mark Giordano, I'm now recognizable as hell in Calgary, and I'm loved in Toronto almost regardless of how this thing plays out. Like, if he sucks this year, he's the joke about from I Think You Should Leave with Santa Claus. And I know this is a deep cut for some of you that don't understand, but it's like, that's my quote. I still get my $2 million. You know, no one's going to care, even if I do a bad job. And even if he does a bad job, no one's going to care because he took way less money.
No, totally disagree with that. So first off, I think that if you make the, you know, he's making 800 and he could have made $2 million. I think he could have made three. Yeah, maybe. Well, that would be different from my point then. But I think there's the potential to earn back a lot of what you leave on the table, like financially by being the guy who did the right thing for the Maple Leafs financially. Like, I think there's a chance that you're not taking a lifetime pay cut, even though you're taking an immediate one. And I do agree that they think the Leafs can win in the way that, I don't know, there's like eight teams every year that have a chance to win, and the Leafs are definitely one of them. You know, I don't know if you see the Leafs as a front runner, but you say, okay, I still give myself a chance by being here. But,
yeah,
you know, I do think there's the risk. Like, John Tavares, I understand John is totally other end of the spectrum, right? But there's a chance that you come here and make this money and people resent you and it goes worse for you. Like, Mark Giordano is still, as much as he's playing for cheap, he's taking up one of the six spots on the Leafs' D-Cor. And I think if he doesn't play well, I don't know if people are going to be as welcoming, just love the guy because he's cheap. Like, you know, this is the thing that I know when I get on the show today and I talk with Kiprios, I know the thing we're going to have the conversation about is, you know, is it good to have guys who are here because they want to be here and they're comfortable and it's home? Do you not want guys who are just like crazy cup hungry? You know, I know that you could say that Giordano is that, but I think Kiprios has made the point in the past that like, you don't want it to be a spot where it's great either way. You don't even have to win and it's great. You know, it's not the ultimate motivation. I don't know. There's a variety of ways to look at what's going on here. Here's where I sit on the whole thing because I'm rambling. It's good. He's a good player. He's worth way more than $800,000. He helped them last year. They need cheap players on the cap. He's going to be better than whoever you can get for $800K in the UFA market. It's a good signing.
And he's here. There's nothing saying that those guys who are just cup hungry are going to choose Toronto of all the teams, right?
100%.
There are a handful of good teams. So what I'm most curious about with Gio being locked in, Born, is the way that this defense shapes up from here. So you've now got five under contract, three of them who are left side, Muzzin, Riley, and Giordano. We'll assume Brody's a right side guy now, and then Justin Hall. You've got Sandin and Liljegren, who are restricted free agents, Lyubushkin, who's an unrestricted. Sandin's kind of the swing piece here, where JD mentioned earlier, it kind of looks like maybe one of him or Muzzin would have to be getting shopped for this all to make sense. Or the other aspect, maybe they think Sandin can develop into a right side guy. What would your comfort level?
No, I meant a forward.
You said trade him. You said trade him for a forward. I'm saying, could you develop him into a right side defenseman? But I'm
at just him into a forward too.
Yeah, no, that's Joey Duzak. If we're switching any defenseman to forward,
done that with Morgan Riley is what
it's Duzak.
Oh my god!
So Bourne,
things are off the rails.
Is it too risky a strategy to enter the year with, hey, we're going to try Sandin on the right side, see if it works out, and if not, then we'll have to deal from our left side surplus to address the right side?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think that they were disappointed this season that Sandin didn't become more valuable. And not that he didn't have a good year or didn't show signs of being a good player. Like, I think that they had really high expectations for Sandin. Not like, oh, he's in our lineup. Like, really high expectations for him. So, you know, you put him on the right side, it's possible that he can make it work for sure. But, like, he's a young guy that they have high hopes on. Like, I don't think they're just trying to get some value out of him. If he turned out to be really good, if he reached the level that I think that they believe he can, you know, could that put you in a position of strength to trade Jake Muzzin? Could that put you in a position of strength where, you know, Gio is like your seventh guy in playoffs? Or, you know, because that's a nice spot, right? You're a good team if Gio's your seventh guy. You know, Liljegren on the right side is going to be a thing next season. Brody is going to be a right side guy. You know, Hall's there too. So, I don't know. It's tough for me to see them saying, not that it doesn't make sense, but I think they'll keep him on the left side for a bit here and see what that presents.
Bleep no. Hell no. Be stronger in this. Are they not moving Sandin to the right side? What are we talking about here? No shot. They tried to do that with a defenseman that they felt really comfortable with it, who they were really high on, Travis Dermott. They went, oh, we love Travis Dermott. He's perfect for what this team needs. Gap control, speed, physical, can move the puck, blah, 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 blah. They are absolutely, unequivocally not doing that with Rasmus Sandin. It's a non-starter. This is the domino. It's either you trade Sandin or you trade Jake Muzzin. You trade Sandin, you potentially lose a guy who could become a bona fide top four blue liner on a really cheap deal and who you have no idea what the ceiling can be. The team is obviously really high on him. You trade Jake Muzzin, you just moved the only guy that's been a winner on a team full of guys with no wins and who was just physical in the postseason and showed you how valuable he can be. Like, the Giordano thing is great, but Bourne, to your point earlier about, hey, what's the cost of Giordano right here, right? It's a great contract. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really good one. It's a steal. I like him, I think, a little bit more than the sounds of you do. I think that his game is going to age really well and that he's not going to be your problem. He'll never slot into your 7th D. He'll be a staple for you. But the opportunity cost now is like, you've got to take one of those two defensemen and however you think the pieces work best, you move one of those two guys. That Kyle Dubas has now told the rest of the NHL, if you want Rasmus Sandin or you want Jake Muzzin, call with your best offer.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with this is it's clear that Rasmus Sandin makes way more sense on paper. He yeah. is going to be way cheaper in your salary cap press team. He is going to be a much better player in the next 7 years.
We just lose Bourne. Right. We lost Bourne. We lost
this
Bourne.
We'll get him right back. The big Sandin lobby cutting him off.
Yeah. Okay. What I will say to what he's talking about, what I think he's talking about, is what we touched on a little bit earlier, is that if you're looking at this team from what makes most sense for the next couple of years, it's obviously keeping Sandin. Right. But if you're looking at trying to win Stanley Cup tomorrow, it's Jake Muzzin. Like, hey, you're fighting
between these. Can I continue my rant?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. I don't know what you... Yeah, go ahead, rant away.
I have no idea where I got caught out. I have no idea. However, I was just yelling into the abyss there for a while. Anyway.
Scream.
You know, I think you were making the point, you saw where I was going with that, is that Sandin makes so much more sense on paper. Muzzin is... The last thing you need to do is get less like Jake Muzzin and more like Rasmus Sandin. You have seen the playoffs. You're watching teams make it difficult. You know, you watch what Tampa did to Florida. I mean, it's the same thing. You cannot move in a direction that is more Sandin and less Muzzin, even though it makes 10 times more sense. So, yeah, they got a bit of a pickle on their hands here. I don't know what Jake Muzzin's going to be over the course of this season and into next playoffs, but I just know if you're running out of decor that's like Sandin and Liljegren and Hull and Gior, you're getting mowed.
No, you're getting killed. And you saw that. And again, I really do believe I'm starting to strengthen some opinions on the offseason, and I did it over this weekend where I'm just like, I'm watching hockey and I'm just sitting there thinking about what this team needs and what the offseason needs to look like. And I'm buying into the idea more of they had this whole offseason of killer instinct and they went, we're going to develop it internally, where I'm going, okay, well, part of that did happen, but now I want to see winners down the lineup in other places. And you remove Muzzin, he's the only guy that won. To me, this is a like, okay, are you going to be able to trade Sandin for a really valuable Sandin-ish version of a forward that gives you some secondary scoring that's on the cheaper? Like, it's a good one-for-one trade kind of thing, right? Do you feel like you can find one of those where it just balances out your team better, and then you're good with that? Or do you move Muzzin, knowing that you're not going to bring back a really valuable asset for him? Like, I don't know what Muzzin's value is because he had a really good playoffs, but I can't imagine a team looks at a 32-year-old defenseman who's been hurt the last couple of years and is on a big $5-plus million deal and says, here's a good piece. Here's a valuable trade chip. But by moving him, what can you do with the salary cap space? Like, what can you add with the space that you save on the Muzzin money and by having Sandin there? Like, that's the balance I think Kyle Dubas has to make, and that's why, to me, you're shopping both guys and you're evaluating the free agent market in such that you're going, what can we actually do here with the extra money? But it has to be, to me, moving on one of the two.
How about this? Can you turn Jake Muzzin into someone Jake Muzzin-like on the right side? You know, like... You just find a trade out there that's, you know, you're not getting, obviously you're not winning a package for some superstar, but you know, is there a team out there in a similar situation who just has someone who fits the specs a little better? You know, we talked about puzzle pieces. Is there a team out there that has a puzzle piece need of someone like Muzzin that says, hey, you know, we got this guy, he's underachieving, he costs $5-6 million, but he's a right shot guy? Because you know, all of the things we're talking about pushes you in a direction that Blake brought up about having someone play the right side. You already have one left shot guy playing on the right side. Like, the issue here is everyone you like is a left shot. So can you just find a way to flip it and do it on the other side? I think you got to at least survey at what's available out there. Because Sandin, I don't want to trade Sandin, if I'm a Leafs brass.
No, neither do I. But does the Muzzin health at all impact a team that's going to be like, super pumped to take on a guy that had two concussions last year, even though he bounced back in the playoffs a bit? Right. But like, is that something else that, I mean, it's going to lower what you're going to get back in return? So it's another thing to consider.
I'm
a little nervous.
Oh, yeah, and you're probably, you know, you're probably getting a lesser player. You know, the more we just sort of chew this around, it's like, he did come off some concussion stuff. You're not sure about the injury stuff. He makes a lot of money. You know, I guess, is there the option to bring back someone on the right side who makes less money, you know, who's just a significantly lesser player? I don't know. It's they got what the problem is that the D-Core is currently constructed, if fully healthy, you know, JD, we've had this talk a million times over. It just doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit. Lots of good players, doesn't fit, isn't good enough to win a Stanley Cup. So that's certainly needs to be a point of address here.
Yeah, I think that the pieces are good. I think it's going to be... I'm curious to see what happens with Lyubushkin and Hall, because to me, Hall at $2 million is totally fine. I know people will freak out about it, but to me, that's actually a valuable chip. It's like, would you rather they pay Lyubushkin the $2 million and then you trade Hall? It just feels like a lateral move to me. It's like, I don't know. What one of the two guys is staying.
I just love Lyubushkin. I can't even explain myself.
I do too, but it's a goes back and forth thing, and to me, it's a... Like, people like Lyubushkin more than Hall because he's been here for less time and the expectations.
Well, it's because he smashes people.
Yeah, it does. But it's also, man, like, if you want to talk about criminal offenders of making horrible plays, like, he's arguably number one, right? Like, he gets absolutely barbecued in transition. He killed them in that regard. And yeah, he's better in front of the net, but I just think that Hall is okay in that way. I just don't think that Hall is way worse than Lyubushkin, right?
Like, no, I don't either. I actually think you're probably, if you had 82 games with both guys, you're probably a better hockey team with Hall there. But in a playoff series, I'm not sure that's the case. I don't know.
But that's bang on. And that's the point I want to get to next is, okay, a playoff series, a playoff series, a playoff series. And I was really thinking about this last night because I watched the Florida Panthers get swept, right? And the Panthers get swept, and I think that the natural inclination of Leaf fans is to be like, hey, that's the team we just pushed to 7 games. We had them right there. And Florida, everyone agreed, was a really good team. And guess what? They got swept. That is now validation of what the Toronto Maple Leafs did in that first round. You have to run it back. My brain went to, didn't Florida last year push Tampa Bay well in the first round? And now this year they come and show up and they lose and they choke this way? Like, I think both things need to be evaluated. I guess, how are you feeling from the standpoint of watching Florida get swept by Tampa? Did it push you in any way? Because, again, to me, it was a reminder that 1 year is 1 year. Using a you lost to a team close and applying it to the next season, it actually lost meaning to me after watching Florida lose.
No, I definitely feel like the Leafs were a good hockey team.
I agree. I know, but
I'd take some validation out of that if I were... Not that the Leafs should say, hey, we were actually pretty good, see? Like, that's not going to cut it. They failed, full stop. However, I do feel like it is a little bit of validation that this team was so close and that the overhaul that anyone would be calling for is excessive because, again, that hockey team that they just beat has the type of wily veteran experience that you can come up against in the playoffs if you're unfortunate enough to draw them. I just felt really good about this Leafs team all year. I know you guys did too. I feel like that playoff series kind of went... I think we learned a lot. Like, they went toe-to-toe with that hockey team and took them deep, and boy, the Florida Panthers couldn't do the same. Florida took a injured Tampa Bay team. Guys limping around, they didn't even have Braden Point. Florida was healthy, and they didn't have a sniff. Bobrovsky played well, not a sniff. To me, as much as the rush is to be like, that the Leafs were super, super close, I actually do take some of that out of that, because boy, Florida did not look good.
I guess I take both. I do feel better about the Leafs, but I already felt good about the Leafs watching them play Tampa. I think that there's something mental for the Panthers when they faced Florida. Like, it was one of those... The way I felt about the Leafs in Game 7, where they needed to score first, was the same way I felt about this past series, where Florida needed to win the first game. And I know it's a confirmation bias thing, but I really do believe it, where they lost that first game... And I thought, that's a wrap. You guys are not going... It is. Like, it's a wrap. This team owns you. They beat you last year. I guess, to me, it's just simply that Florida went all in this year. They pushed even deeper. And yeah, they were first in the regular season. They have all these things to be happy and proud with. But so much of their year was Tampa went and won a cup. And Florida, before the Leafs now, was the team that the Lightning faced that were their quote-unquote toughest out, right? You remember that series a year ago?
Oh, yeah.
It was like a ton of goal scoring, and Florida had bite, and it was a chippy series, and I think it only went 6 games, but either way.
I think it was five. Everyone remembers it to be so close, but yeah, I know what you mean. It was a good series.
It was a good series, and either if it was five or six, I think you're right that it was five. It was one of those things where we're like, Florida is here. And I'm just saying, my only caution would be that just because the Leafs push Tampa, that that is like a, you roll it back and enough is enough and everything should right. be the same, is that the seasons aren't static like that. Things are going to change, and I still believe in some of the things that need to change for the Leafs. That said, that brings me to the next discussion. I got two more topics for you. Mm-hmm. The case against making a trade just to make a trade is watching Nazem Kadri score a hat trick for the second for the best team in hockey, arguably.
That to me is the case against losing a trade, not the case against making a trade.
Okay.
To make a trade.
No, not make. I'm just yes. Don't lose a trade that badly. It's so bad. It's the worst. It's honestly one of the worst trades I can remember. It's going to go down as. Like, I think that the Mason Marchment one is going to be a little bit forgotten by people. It's more the hipster pick because Mason Marchment at the time was like an AHL player, was a AHL for AHL. It burns you, but that happens in sports, right? It's an unknown
what
commodity.
Are you, no playoff points this year?
Yeah,
great player.
Exactly. And like, yeah. my point is like the people that point to that one, I'm like, okay, those ones just happen in sports sometimes, right? Like you flip the Leafs got Zach Hyman from Florida for Greg McKegg. I view that as like a wash now between the two organizations because like trades like that happen. The Kadri right. one, we knew Nazem Kadri was a stud. The Leafs originally built the team around having the three lines. Kadri was on a great deal. They traded him for nothing. My only Kadri thing here is, one, did you think there was anything wrong with the play that ended up injuring Binnington? But two, is that like, was that weirdly like the Nazem Kadri game, how good do you think that is for the sport of hockey? Like seeing a guy who's like Naz, who's like fully willing to embrace a role like that and produces like that.
Well, so the play itself, I thought, was very Naz-like, much and not an insult to the guy or the way he plays, but the way that, like, Corey Perry, like, oops, did I fall on your goalie? And, like, all these guys that are guys who play on the edge find a way to make us have the discussion, did he mean to do that? Because guess what? He kind of did. You know, like, they put themselves in that situation. He says, like, Rosen bumped him or whatever. He bumped into Rosen trying to get himself in one of those spots. So, yeah, I think he meant to do it. I also think that it is good, you know, he faced a lot of hate after that, and he talked about that situation, how people who are less mentally tough than him have, you know, would have a harder time dealing with it. And then in the face of all that sort of hatred and racism, he goes out and scores three. That was awesome. I mean, that was a big moment for him, mm-hmm. for the sports. You know, I think even for the HDA, that's something they could hang their hat on as a, you know, a commercial or something. What an answer, you know, that not backing down in the face of all that. I thought that was awesome. The one thing I do want to say, though, about the Kyle Dubas trade and the Kadri trade, I was thinking about it this morning because I knew these discussions would come up. And awful trade. It'll be the defining Dubas trade because he trades him for a skilled offensive defenseman who can't defend at all and a small depth forward, like very Dubas pieces. But also,
really is.
Also,
that's really good.
I also feel like, if you're with a partner, like let's say your ex cheats on you several times and you dump them and then they get their act together and go on to be happily married with someone else, you still should have dumped that person. And Kadri went through it twice with the Leafs and burned them badly and potentially could cost them series. And then he goes to St. Louis and he does it last year. So you can't say that they traded away a guy who was never going to do it again or whatever. It's very revisionist to me to be like, see, they should have kept Kadri. It's like, how often can you let a guy burn you without saying, this is the same organization we're saying, hold people accountable. They held them accountable.
I don't. I kind of like this analogy. It has some holes.
Maybe it's a stretch. I don't know.
Okay, similar wavelength, though. Someone doing kind of same kind of prove it is Evander Kane. Obviously, there was a lot of conversations about him getting the contract with Edmonton, but he's lighting up two hat tricks so far in the postseason, and Edmonton's looking pretty dynamite. What do you make of just like the way that they're owning the Calgary Flames with Connor McDavid being the best player in hockey ever?
I just think we haven't seen this. Since I've been doing a radio show with JD, which is, I don't know how long now, 6 years or something like that, we a player has not looked this much better. Like in basketball, I compared it to like when LeBron was dragging like garbage Cleveland teams, just like dragging them to the finals. This, not that the Oilers are garbage, but I've never seen a player do what McDavid is doing and just saying, no. I am winning this series. I don't care. Calgary is huge and strong and defensive, and they forecheck, and they are mean. And McDavid's like, don't care. Our team is winning, and I haven't seen a player like do it in the modern day like he's doing it right now.
Man, it's funny that you made that analogy, because I talked earlier about how it's like, this is like watching Shaq, where you went, holy crap, like this guy's so much bigger and stronger, and it was like Shaq in the playoffs with the Lakers, where it just felt unfair, and I'm like, how is this even possible? Like, how is it that a guy can do it this
right.
way? The only comparable that you can make with Connor McDavid is to NBA players, because that's the sport where we're used to having it, where it's like, well, one guy, the best guy in a series, can totally take over and change it. And you go like, all right, I said, hey, Sid was amazing, and I love Sidney Crosby. He's one of my favorite players ever, right?
Yeah.
And he dominated series. Like, I'll never forget that 2016 Cup run where I was like, oh my God, this guy, am I ever going to see a player be as good as 2016 Sidney Crosby, right? Where yeah. I really went, oh God, it's so awesome watching him play. But he did it in ways that we're used to watching hockey players do it, right? Like, he just did it a better
grinded
version.
Grinded it out and, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Just like a better version of it, where it's like, oh, you know what? This guy's really good behind the net. It's like, this guy's really good. This guy's really good at using his body to shield defenders
Great
and
tip.
Creating plays off. Yeah, exactly. Great tip. Exactly. Doing all the little things, but better than everybody else did them. What McDavid is doing is like, I actually wonder if... despite having played him this many times, if some of the Calgary players are just like shell-shocked, where they watch him and they're like, oh my God, no. Oh my God.
Right.
Look, he's bearing down. He's doing it again. Like, there are just play after play after play where it looks like everybody else, I can't tell if he's getting faster or if other guys are slowing down, but I said, to me, it's like he's breaking physics, where I'm like, I don't understand how this, like, my eyes can't pick up what's happening in the play that makes sense to my brain. You know, yeah. Where I'm like, this doesn't make sense to my brain watching this guy play the game this way. And we, Ailish and I joked earlier, like, we're off the Flames. We're fully about the Oilers. Go Oilers, go. Because I can't get enough of just watching Connor McDavid. This isn't even about the Battle of Alberta anymore.
Yeah.
It's just about watching this guy, the best player in hockey, ascend into a territory that no hockey fan has ever seen before. Unless you were, like, alive to see Bobby Orr or Wayne Gretzky do some stuff. Like, that's the
right.
the class of brilliance here. Mario.
Like, nine multi-point games in the first 10 postseason games for this guy.
Yeah.
Like, I think Elliot said on one of the broadcasts that, like, he makes cuts and plays in skates that people can't make in shoes. Like, the
no,
way he's
close.
Able to change directions, it's just... It really is fascinating. Oh, the one thing Calgary can do is, for the love of God, can they get Gudbranson and Zadorov off the ice when that man gets out there? I mean, play 5-on-3 until that pair can change. McDavid's just like are licking his chops, seeing these gigantic guys who can't pivot. I mean, I know Daryl Sutter is stubborn and has a way he wants to play, but that's it. It's got to be – they miss Tanev more than people realize right now, but they just need to have the other pairs on the ice against that guy.
I think there's adjustments Calgary can make. They can play their top line more. Like, those guys should probably crack 20 minutes when you're in must-win games. I would imagine that they're going to do that tonight. I just – again, so much of it feels like – whatever. Like, even Ailish gave Kane the credit, and he deserves credit because he's obviously worth it, and he's sticking it in people's eye. But I went, yeah, but it's all McDavid. Like, what's he doing if he's not there with this guy doing this thing? Like, every storyline feels so secondary to me that whenever anybody brings anything up, and that makes sense what you just said, right? Like, that makes sense. But I just go, yeah, but who cares? Because he'll just do that against whatever other defense pairings out there. You know,
like, in my mind, I can, as I'm saying it, I can see him like walking Rasmus Sandin a couple
Which
times.
He did.
And I'm like,
Which
yeah,
he,
I don't know. Yes, and I'm like, who do they have? Who can they put out there? Like, I don't know. My own point might be moot because I don't have the players to do it. No one does.
Yeah, and nice try with the girlfriend analogy thing, the ex-dump, like, as the guy who makes analogies on the show, say, like, that.
Totally ran it by, I'm planning it for later on our show, so I thought I'd give it a try run.
You want the holes? Is like, no one said, like, you should break up with her and then just date another worse loser.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's why
that's
I led with
it. I know.
With the, what they
like,
got back was brutal. You're right.
Yeah, it is revisionist history, and I bring it up every time, is that everyone thought Kadri had to go, but to me it's like once the offer became, well, all you can get back is Kerfoot and Tyson Barry, you go, no.
Tyson Barry.
Yeah, like
Barry.
That's what I'm saying. It's like when the offer gets to that level of lowliness, there has to be a point where you say, okay, well, you know what? Even though she cheats on me, I'm the biggest loser. You know, you're like, I can't do any better. And if I lose her, I'll die alone. I'll go into years of depression. Like, it's just something. There has to be
trades
some kind of
not be abusive relationships.
That's what I'm saying. It's like there has to be a cutoff line.
You have to need better for yourself, JD.
Like, there has to be a cutoff line. And that cutoff line should have been like, I don't know. Like, it's just funny to me that they were able to sell them on. You know, Tyson Berry got a lot of points, and dude was like, "Oh, those points look good." It's
listen,
like,
he was a right shot D man who can skate pass and whatever, and that's all they needed.
Yeah. Oh, he can make a stretch pass after he's been pinned in his own end for a minute.
Don't worry about why he's in his own end. Just look at the pass.
The Kerfoot thing. They're like, he could be a center. They're like, he could be. It's like but he isn't.
He went
to
Harvard. We love that.
But he could have been. Yeah. Don't do those trades. Justin Bourne, thanks as always. And I'll be listening today to hear how you punch up that analogy. Thanks for making that, buddy.
Thanks, team. Talk to you later.
See you, pal. This Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. And that's totally – maybe that's just Bourne and I – sometimes speaking to each other too often where we end up coming up with the same takes. But I really think that the only thing that you can compare Connor McDavid to is dominant basketball players. And you're just not used to that in this sport.
This is always the conversation, right? Is when we talk about salary cap percentages or how you should structure your roster and stuff. The thing we always say is, well, hockey players don't impact the game the same way as an individual in basketball because it's 40 minutes out of 48 versus 22 out of 60. And Connor McDavid is like, no, I can. It's you got to kind of change the entire accounting of how one guy has an impact. Mike Trout's been trying this for like a decade now to be like one player can do it, and now he's got a second player, and they're actually doing it finally. Connor McDavid trying to LeBron himself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When was the last time you heard the opposing team like give one player so much credit as well? Like usually they're like,
Kachuk
oh, we didn't play.
His name.
Well, we all know he's like, no. But like,
I know, but
you
it's
know,
just, it's funny
who
watching
is he talking about?
Zach Hyman. But like, you know, post game, especially in the playoffs, it's, hey, you know, our team needs to do this better. We need to do this better, blah, 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 blah. But he was like, we're getting beat by one guy and he's really good and we need to figure that out. So like, you know, it's a little bit of respect there, but also
100%.
Yeah, not saying his name. We know who
but it is. Everybody with eyes can see it and everybody completely understands it. And I really do believe that there's a part of this where they are just like they're bamboozled. They're like, we don't know what to do.
Hoodwinked.
We're like, what are we supposed to do about this? Like they're watching the tape probably going, sure, but I can't get faster, stronger. This is just going to keep happening.
There's only one off day. I can't improve that much.
There's no adjustment to trying to skate with this guy when he's ripping through the neutral zone, gains his own, and like you know is stick handling the puck in a way that looks like it's out of a movie where it's fake because they're like, cha-cha-cha. You know, you see the movie cuts of someone stick handling really awesome. It's like, that's what he does, except for in real life, watching him do it. I'm like, how are you even better at this than everybody else? Like, how are you better at every single thing than all the other people? And actually, this is maybe a topic for the text line, so I'm going to fire it out because, we'll close the show with some more text. But I kind of always thought that there's a little bit of a rivalry between the Leafs and Oilers in terms of like they have McDavid and we have Matthews, and we pride ourselves on the whole like it's closer than you think. And I've done it. I'll admit
we did that
done it
all season
times.
With the Hart conversation.
And I still stand by my belief that Matthews should win the Hart this season. It's a regular season award. It doesn't change my opinion on that. But do you find yourself that you're rooting for? Because I think people used to root against the Oilers here, going, maybe McDavid will want to leave someday, that maybe McDavid, it'll
come
be ugly
Toronto
there for them.
On a hometown discount of $800,000.
I just think that everyone was cheering for Calgary as the secondary team. Not as many people were cheering for Edmonton. And I really believe now that that has flipped. And people all want to see the McDavid train keep a chugging along. So, let us know. 590-590 at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at Blake Murphy, ODC, or at E. Blake Murphy. Hit us up. And we'll read some of those next. Fan Morning Show, JD Blake and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
590 The Fan, JD Blake and Ailish, and Text Line Tuesday. So we got the rest of the show. Get your texts in. We'll take them. Also get your messages, DMs, like, subscribe, download, follow us. All the good stuff. Our buddy Frank from Fergus, always in the text line. Frankie, this time we'll get it right. He starts us off with, the fact we haven't put Brody and Gio on a pairing yet is criminal. Hot take, the Leafs should go after Domi in the offseason to fill the bottom lines of skilled physical players and prove me wrong deal. Another local guy.
Domi, well, first of all, like, he just scored his first playoff goal like a week ago. So,
didn't he get two in the same game?
Yeah, he did. He got two in the same game. Yeah. But I'm just saying, in terms of like killer instinct, he's not exactly who comes to mind first.
he's
this
kind of
gets to
he's the, like a lower end Tom Wilson.
No, but I boy, is he a lower end Tom.
This like 12 degrees lower.
Though is like the Tom Wilson types are going to take a little off the table at times too. So they have to be bringing a lot to the table. So a lesser Tom Wilson type is not a Tom Wilson type at all. Because
you guys
do
know he's
good...
not Ty Domi, right? Like, he's Max Domi. He's not
no,
like
I
a
thought
Tom
this
Wilson
meant Ty Domi.
No, but I just – yeah, I'm like – I don't really see the – anyway. I guess this kind of gets to the Bourne thought earlier of like, hey, do you really want guys who just want to live here versus guys who want to win and die and play hockey games? And I don't know. It just – it's a tough one. I don't particularly – C-Max is a great fit for this team, especially considering what he can command dollar-wise. Yeah, no. I think that there's no need for a move like that. That's like a throwback to a creature of comfort thing. Yeah, but they, you know what? I will say this. Is like they got to figure out how to get some better depth and in the forward groups. We all loved the like third line because it felt like they had a good shutdown line. They hadn't had one in forever, but it's like that's what the bar is that in the Matthews era, since these guys have been like in the competitive window, they haven't had any depth at the forward position. It's a reason why when Tavares goes down, you lose the Montreal Canadiens and go, well, you know, they didn't have Tavares. It's why when you played Columbus and they loaded up that top line and nobody else could score, you went, oh, like maybe they like they had to try Nylander at center. I think that the one clear and obvious tweak is you can't keep going into playoff series with the worst fourth lines in hockey. Yeah, not every team has four amazing lines. That's the salary cap era. I get that, but the Leafs have had a criminally bad forward line this year. Like, their best guy didn't even start in the first two games on that line. They tried to go with something else. They got to have an identity down the lineup. They got to find some goal scoring in other spots. They have to be a threat somewhere else. And so, yeah, if that they feel like that's Domi, great, but I don't. That's not a fit I see as an obvious one. What's next?
All right, here, let's get a little basketball going here. Morning, guys. If the Warriors win the trophy this year, does this tarnish KD's legacy further? Also, Mercedes is back, baby. What a race for them this weekend. God. Sean from Pickering, our Alpine Milk guy.
Okay, yeah. I got to tell you, I the Mercedes thing, big. But the Warriors slant on KD is incredible. By you. I'm sure it's out there, but I hadn't even really thought about it because to me, this is more about like these guys building off of their already great legacy. If they can win a championship post Durant, you're right. I hadn't. It's incredible for them. To me, I was thinking more after this last game when it came to the Warriors about two things. One is like, will we care about Andrew Wiggins more as Canadians? And I have some Wiggins thoughts I want to flesh out, and I will on a different show. I'm not going to do it today because it's a bigger thing, and I really want to I want to delve deep into Wiggins because he's truly one of the players that like I've cared about at different phases a lot. And yeah, I think that's created different ripples. But with Steph was like, just how good he is and how even Wiggins has the quote-unquote Wiggins game, but it was still a Steph game. And we talked about McDavid and how he changes geometry of things. And it's just like you watch Steph in a game like that where Luka has 40, but Steph had 31 and his team won. And he hit all the big shots that his team needed to on the road to basically close that sucker out. If Steph wins this title in the era of parity, where it's like, no, the Warriors weren't just stacked. The Warriors weren't just like with KD it does a lot for his legacy. And I think it does a lot for the, when his career is over, where people rank him. I think he'll be into the Kobe conversation of like, he probably gets rated a little too high amongst the greatest players of all time in isolation, but the totality of it all cannot be ignored. And so you have to put him into those like crazy stratospheres, regardless of some of the other information we have.
He almost gets an assist from KD in that way, in that he's then one pre-KD, with KD, post-KD. Like, his career splits into acts in a really natural way. And this is something I felt all year, and especially in the playoffs, is that the Warriors are maybe not the same level of exciting basketball that they once were, but this idea of like, hey, we were the dynasty and it's been 3+ years. Do we have one more left in it? Can we find that fastball for one more 16-game stretch? And it's been really interesting to watch. Like, Steph Curry's last couple games have been magnificent. And it's not, and it doesn't even feel like it's full Steph all the time yet. So
last game did. I will say I watched it on, I didn't watch it live. And so it's always a little weird when I'm looking for extra stuff, but I thought Steph was spectacular in that last game. Like, that's as good as anybody can play basketball.
He's Steph. It's gonna look really, really good when it looks good. And so I don't know. I find this idea fascinating. I know Draymond's been more annoying than great in this playoff run so far, but between Draymond and Klay fighting through age and injury and stuff, and Steph trying to find that one last, you know, heavyweight title fighter coming back, I've found it pretty interesting, and I think it'll be super interesting if they're up against a Boston team that is kind of the inverse of like, hey, we're trying to get that first title in what we think could be a dynasty of sorts. So that to me is a fascinating finals kind of undercurrent. We'll see if we get there at all. Yeah, I think it hurts KD a little bit too.
It absolutely hurts KD. Way to be ahead of the curve on this take. It's such a that's such a like an obvious take that I can't believe that I didn't have that one first. And sometimes the obvious takes are the best ones. And I'm sure that you've seen this out here. I'm like, again, I don't pay a ton of attention right now to some of what other media outlets do, but that's a really, really, really good one. I'm surprised by your Draymond thing, because actually, like, Draymond doesn't shoot anymore, but he's making some passes in this series and some plays. Like, his rebounding, his passing, and his defense have been like, he's their second best player. He's their second most important player. Like, I feel like this has been like the definitive Draymond run, if anything. Like,
I mean, in terms of his overall impact, for sure. There have just been a couple games where he has been taken out of the game completely. And when he doesn't, he's doing the Draymond thing.
With since he is, was ejected.
Yeah, or but no, sometimes he gets, you know, if he has foul trouble or something's not worried. Like, I just said with Tom Wilson that you sometimes take a little bit off the table. So you have to make sure you're bringing a ton to it. Draymond can take some stuff off the table. And
I just think that if they make this finals run,
once in a while,
this will be like known as the Draymond and Steph run, like more.
Yeah,
than
I'm not
the
saying
Splash
he's
Brothers
been
run.
Bad by any means. It's just like there have been some times where it's like, ooh, Draymond's on the wrong side of that line he always toes, and that was a silly foul, or that was a like there have been games also where like he's begging to get tossed, and like half the discussion around the game is just, is he going to do enough? Is he's stepping on that line? He's a habitual line stepper. Will he go over it? But no, not yet.
Okay. Here's a fun one from Adam in Guelph, who, as you might remember, said he's going to get our signatures tattooed on his body if Tampa Bay wins the cup. So just a reminder, Adam, we remember, seen a guy go tarps off on the course this weekend, big time JD vibes. It's time.
No,
I would never do that. Eh? You got more class.
You gotta be at like a really dusty course for you to go tarps off. I think like that's a pretty, like, this is part of the reason why I don't like golf in terms of being a part of golf culture.
You
is
have
that
to
that
wear
would
a shirt.
Be so, well, yeah, it's like, but it's just like, no, but shirts. It's the idea that people would be like, oh, you're out in the sun and you're doing something athletic, but if you took your shirt off, it's like against the decorum of the game. But yeah, it's a little, I do think that if you're accepting to go to a golf course, that you're accepting to play by the rules of the course. And yeah, going tarps off, I think, is pretty, yeah, not great. I don't think that's a good look. I think that, yeah, if you were golfing with someone that took your shirt off, you'd be like, hey, put your shirt back on. Like, come on. What are you doing? Like, that's pretty clear. Like, I don't know.
Probably
I'm a big tarps off guy. But there's like, yeah, there's it's summer in Ontario. You can go anywhere tarps off essentially now, and it's cool. But that's the one – that's one of the places where you're outdoors doing an activity, and it's frowned upon. So, no, that's not me vibes.
All right. I saw a lot of spike ball happening this weekend tarps in off, the no park. Problem. Loving the spike ball.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of that happening. So that's how you
I'm
know
starting to, like, obviously, I love spike ball. I'm a big proponent of it. You know, looking at my kit beside me right now, and, like, I think
yeah,
I'm,
I actually
like,
saw
turning...
someone on the streetcar this weekend with a disc golf backpack bag thing, and yeah. I tried to sneak a pic, but I didn't want to be creepy, but I thought of you instantly.
I was supposed to play disc golf today, but old Sam McKee, who, by the way, gave the winning JT pick, which Ailish rode into profits.
I was going to say in the wake and rake, the shout out to Sam McKee, because I put, I don't know, like 10 or 20 bucks on Justin Thomas to win, and like he was down 7 shots at the beginning of the final round. I was like, oh, it's never gonna hit, and then all of a sudden I got the payout notification, and I was like, okay, Sam McKee, thank you.
Yeah. Poor Mito Pereira, though, who nobody knew before Sunday. I was actually texting all people like, who the bleep is Mito Pereira? Like, that's it. It's like, okay. And yeah, that's a boy. It's the PGA, luckily for him. So people, but nobody's going to forget that. That's like literally, yeah, that's a tough one. That's like that's the only thing your name will ever be remembered for now is a choke job. And it's like if you're playing golf with somebody and it's going to be like, don't Mito it. And it's like, that makes sense to people now. It's like, your name is going to be tied with choke jobs. That's tough. Sorry, Mito Pereira. Tough. That's a really tough look for you. You were close. Okay. Didn't even make the playoff. Yikes. Oof. Anyway, what's next?
Let's see if we can get one last one here. Jay from Fergus. God, everybody in Fergus loves us. I noticed a few games ago that Dante Bichette is no longer in the dugout. I'm wondering if the lack of his guidance in the dugout should be a concern, because it seems like the young hitters were really leaning upon him and his advice.
Hey, this is a Ben Ennis take, but it's kind of gaining traction. Is that Dante... It used to be Dante was ebbs and flows. Was, hey, Dante, give your kid some space, you know, like let him be his own man and stay out of there. Then you went, oh, no, they're like super tight and he's around and apparently he's not stepping on any toes and the Jays are raking. So what problem could it be? Now he's gone and the Jays' approach seemingly has changed. Although they're still really aggressive and they still swing at a lot of first pitches, which is kind of the Dante thing. But either way, listen, Dante stock is up right now. There's no doubt about it. If you held on to your Dante stock post Blue Jays, you feel very good about your holdings right now.
My question would just be, is Dante so petty that now that he's not in the dugout, Bo's not allowed to like text him or call him? Because I don't, if everyone but Bo was struggling all season, maybe that'd be the thing. It'd be like, Bo's the only one with access to Dante. But no, I mean, I'm sure it didn't hurt to have an extra voice around, especially if you get a guy you trust. But no, I don't think that's the only thing going on here.
Yeah.
Dave and Barry, quick comment. I low-key want to see Tampa win because dynasties are cool, and I want the big rig to have 4 straight. I kind of forgot about the big rig getting 4 straight rings, eh?
I didn't.
4 Jesus. Straight rings.
Do you know what I think about with Tampa is how Corey Perry wanted to play here, and they went with Wayne Simmons instead. Whoopsie. That was a tough one. All right, let's leave it at that. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday's show. Thanks for everybody for listening. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. JD, Blake, and Ailish, talk to you tomorrow.